Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. The COVID-19 pandemic is worsening in Alaska. The State Department of Health and Social Services has reported two new Fairbanks fatalities since Friday, a man in his 80s and another in his 90s. The latest fatalities increased Alaska's pandemic-long death toll to 67. Statewide, there were 630 new Alaska resident cases announced Friday through Sunday, including 82 in the Fairbanks North Star borough. Hospitalizations are also up, with 45 confirmed COVID-19 patients, plus another 28 awaiting test results in Alaska hospitals. 11 patients are on ventilators. A state judge has ruled that Governor Dunleavy's vetoes of state funding for abortions from the court system's budget were unconstitutional. KTOO and Alaska Public Media report that Anchorage Superior Court Judge Jennifer Henderson ruled Friday that Dunleavy's vetoes of $335,000 both last year and this year violated the separation of powers doctrine. She also voided the veto for the current budget. Henderson wrote in her decision that she has faith the judiciary remains independent, but also said, quote, "The court must unfortunately conclude that in vetoing funds appropriated to the state appellate courts in express retaliation against the Alaska Supreme Court for its legal decision-making, the governor violated the separation of powers doctrine," unquote. Dunleavy's veto statement said both the legislature and executive branch are opposed to state funding for elective abortions, adding, quote, "The only branch of government that insists on state-funded elective abortions is the Supreme Court," unquote. The American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska and Anchorage residents Bonnie Jack and John Kaufman sued Dunleavy over the vetoes. ACLU of Alaska legal director Stephen Kotef says Henderson's decision will have lasting significance.
Courts can't operate under the thumb of the executive if they are to remain impartial. In this case, we think every Alaskan is the winner, because every citizen needs to know that the courts will protect their constitutional rights without the fear that the scales will be tilted against them.
The veto came after a Supreme Court decision that held that a state law and regulation defining when an abortion could be considered medically necessary to be eligible for Medicaid reimbursement violated the state constitution. The governor's office and the Department of Law did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the ruling. The state fire marshal's office says a blaze that destroyed the Clearwater Lodge near Delta Junction last month caused an estimated $500,000 in damage. As KUAC's Tim Ellis reports, investigators have concluded the fire was accidental.
When word went out on the morning of September 23rd that the Clearwater Lodge had burned to the ground, a lot of locals suspected it had again been torched by an arsonist, because that's how the old lodge was destroyed back in May of 2014. But that rumor was put to rest last week when Alaska State Troopers released some findings of the State Fire Marshal's Office's investigation.
Pretty sure that it started with our kitchen where we stored our oily rags at the end of every evening.
Owner Kevin Ewing says the damage estimate of $500,000 is about half of the actual value of all that was lost, including custom woodwork and fancy furnishings like gold nugget motifs and fossilized mastodon tusks.
$500,000 is a total understatement. I'm thinking more like $1.2 to $1.5 million worth of damage.
Ewing was out on a hunting trip when he got the word about last month's fire, and since he's been back, he's been working with investigators and insurance adjusters and the like, and trying to deal with the loss of the new lodge 6 years after the old one was burned down.
I haven't even been going over there. It just makes me sick.
While he was distracted, some thieves snuck onto the site a couple of weeks ago and stole a freezer full of meat and some expensive furnishings that weren't damaged in the fire. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
A Glen Allen man is in custody after shooting at a state trooper during a day-long pursuit that began Friday morning on the Toke Cutoff. Alaska State Troopers report that 59-year-old Mark Emery Hines was reported by another driver to have nearly caused a collision on the Toke Cutoff near the Gakona Lodge Road intersection. They say a trooper out of Glen Allen caught up to Hines, who shot at the trooper. The trooper returned fire, after which Hines ditched his vehicle and ran into the woods, where he apparently spent the night. Troopers subsequently closed a 30-mile stretch of the nearby Richardson Highway Friday to search for Hines, dispatching three special emergency reaction teams and a helicopter with additional assistance from the Alaska Bureau of Investigations, the FBI, the National Park Service, and Area Village Public Safety officers. Troopers say a citizen tip about a sighting of Hines led officers to him Saturday, and he was arrested without incident near Richardson Highway milepost 131. They say Hines was checked at a local clinic, then transported to the Matsu pretrial facility in Palmer, where he was booked. The race for Fairbanks Area State Senate District B has narrowed to two candidates. Evan Eads has dropped out of what was a three-way race with fellow non-affiliated candidate Marna Sanford and Republican Robert Myers. Eads shared his decision during a League of Women Voters of the Tanana Valley candidate forum Friday night.
I have determined that the sacrifice that I can make personally, and it's late in the game, but I'm going to be dropping out of this race, and I'm going to be, I hadn't decided this until this evening, but I will be endorsing Marna Sanford.
Eads said he believes he can work with Sanford and that she will incorporate his ideas about the state's future, including a focus on resource development. Senate seat B was long held by John Coghill of North Pole, who lost to Myers in the Republican primary in August. A new series of films document the firsthand experiences of Indigenous people whose ways of life are being transformed as Bering sea ice diminishes. KiwiC's Mary Ald reports.
The first episode of the series, titled After the Ice, opens with an aerial image of sea ice. Viewers hear the voice of an Indigenous elder.
Since time immemorial, that's when the polar ice used to reach us. Kulusik, the mother ice.
The three-part series shows the Alaska Native people whose homelands and traditional ways of life are being transformed as the sea ice that is central to their ways of life grows smaller and is present for a shorter window of time due to human-caused climate change. The series is a culmination of the five-year study of environmental Arctic change led by researchers at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. The films add the perspective of Indigenous people to the hard science researchers produced. Melissa Johnson is the director of the Bering Sea Elders Group, an association of elders from Indigenous communities along the Bering Sea. She connected elders with filmmakers so they could share their stories.
Our Indigenous communities continue to look for ways to collaborate with Western academia, scientists, researchers.
Johnson said the story of diminishing Bering Sea ice isn't complete without the perspectives of Indigenous people.
Everything you find in a textbook isn't going to tell you everything that you need. The decisions that are made, you know, at a local level, to the state level, to national level, and then international levels, they impact ways of life.
Filmmaker Eli Kintish worked with both elders and scientists to create the films. He says he was drawn to stories he heard from elders who are watching the sea ice diminish.
You can imagine the asphalt of our modern communities that we rely on to get around suddenly just disappearing. The loss of the sea ice represents a fundamental transformation unlike anything most of us can really imagine.
The COVID-19 pandemic required Kintish and his team to get creative with their craft. To avoid visiting remote villages where the film crew might infect locals with the virus, the team hired local people to film their winter experiences with the sea ice themselves. The film also includes illustrated recreations of some of the stories told by elders. There was an online premiere for the series on October 7th. Now, the films are available to stream on PBS.org. For KUAC, I'm Mary Ald.
And I'm Dan Bross.